And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, and it's great to be with you. I'm Gary Matuta, your sensei and host of the program. Got a great show in store for you today. As always, you know, we always have a whole lineup of great guests that come on the show, many big names that have been well-established as Catholic apologists and evangelists. Had Tim Staples, we've had Marcus Grodi, we've had all sorts of great people. We also have lots of people that have specialized fields. And so we had Dr. Edward Faser, and we've had others that, you know, are very well known in the field. And actually, today's guest is very well known in the field, especially, I think, more for youth and that type of thing, youth evangelism, apologetics, and his name on YouTube land is Catholic Brian. Catholic Brian Mercier is here, and we're going to talk about youth. We're going to talk about obstacles to get through to youth, obstacles to evangelizing youth, obstacles to introduce apologetics to youth. So that's going to be a ton of fun, and as always, you're part of the program. So give us a call, 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Especially if you have a question for Catholic Brian. And he, like I said, is so knowledgeable in this area that I can't wait to pick his brain and, you know, kind of get the lowdown about, you know, how can somebody, you know, an older person like myself, light a fire under youth, you know? Light a fire for evangelism and apologetics. So that's coming up on the other side of the break. And as always, you know, we have our critical thinking skills. Today's critical thinking skill, our finding the fallacy for today, is actually a new one. I just discovered this one, and it's interesting. It's called the fallacy of sunk cost. So the fallacy of sunk cost. And also we meet one of the early church fathers every episode. And like I said, if you're a consistent listener to this program, boy, you have a really great knowledge base of all these great Christian writers in the early church amongst the early church fathers. And today's Meet the Early Church Father is Theodoret of Syre. There's a lot of information about him, so God willing, I'll be able to squeeze it all in before the break. And like I said, as always, if you have a question, give us a call, 888-526-2151, or you can send us your emails at questions@handsonapologetics.com, all one word. And I do receive your emails. I do respond to them. And I even occasionally will bring it up on a Dojo Mailbox show like we had a little over a week ago. So I want to give my shout-outs to those watching live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Ah, beautiful emoji explosion on the chat room in the Dojo section of YouTube. Great to see familiar names. Thank you for all the colorful emojis. And yes, it is going to be an awesome show, Beth. I have a sensation that this is going to be sensational. So God willing, despite my efforts to probably dampen things down. Okay, why don't we jump into our Finding the Fallacy segment. And like I mentioned, Finding the Fallacy today is the fallacy of sunk cost. And sometimes this actually comes from the world of economics, but it's also a kind of fallacy in and of itself. It says sometimes we invest ourselves so thoroughly in a project that we're reluctant to ever abandon it, even when it turns out to be fruitless and futile. So basically, we commit ourselves to a project and we keep digging and digging. And even though we realize the futility of the project, nevertheless, we keep on going on because idea behind it is to carry on because we find something important and not and kind of ignore that all the resources we're putting into it, all the time we're putting into it, And it's kind of like a make or break thing, and we have decided to make it regardless of the cost. So you ignore future costs and you just keep pouring money and effort resources into this hole. And, you know, there may be a sense of accomplishment when you finish, and, you know, it might have other incidental values, but really there's nothing to justify the cost of investment in it. Now you're wondering, well, what does this have to do with fallacies and apologetics? Well, you know, I think this is a good fallacy, at least it's a psychology behind lots of things in apologetics. You will meet people who are so invested in a particular idea that no matter what evidence to the contrary you give them, they will just never give up. In the field of studying a course of cults, there's a name for this. It's called brain lock. And these are people that even if you proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that their belief system is entirely made up and false, they are so invested in that belief system that they would not change. Even if they're convinced it was false, they wouldn't change. So I don't know if I would actually categorize this as an informal fallacy, but I ran across it and I thought, you know, boy, that is something good that we need to be aware of. Is, you know, there are people who, you know, this does occur in argumentation, and occasionally you will. I've met a few that could be categorized as suffering from brain lock, that, you know, they have, what was it? They have swallowed the red pill. I should listen more closely to the Jesus 911 show, because I know Jesse uses that. I believe it's the red pill is the one that you go down the rabbit hole. All right. So anyway, that's our finding the fallacy for today. Let's talk about the Meet the Early Church Father, who's Theodoret of Syre, born sometime around AD 393, died sometime around 466. He was born in Antioch in 423, about the years 30 years old. He went somewhat against his will. He was made bishop of Syre, which is a small town in Syria. 2 days' journey from Antioch, and that's 2 days' journey via donkey, not via car. He governed his diocese very well. He's an incredibly capable bishop in that sense for more than 40 years. He's also the product of a theological school known as the Antiochian School of Theology, which generally approaches Scripture in a very literal sense. It ignores the other senses of Scripture. And in fact, Jurgens points out that he is the last and of the great theologians to come out of that school. However, you know, Theodoret did have his problems. He, especially with his Antiochian training, he was convinced that St. Cyril of Alexandria's theology was Apollinarius tendencies. In other words, it kind of tended towards a heresy where they thought that Jesus, the incarnation was that Jesus had a human body, but a divine mind. He didn't have a human soul, which, of course, St. Cyril of Alexandria didn't believe that, but Theodoret believed he did. And in 431, he wrote a long, extant polemical work against the 12 anathemas of Cyril of Alexandria. And also at the Council of Ephesus, Theodoret sided with John of Antioch. And even after Nestorius was condemned by it, by the way, John of Antioch was a Nestorian, he wrote a comprehensive work of 5 books against Cyril and Ephesus. So he loved Nestorianism. And Nestorianism, of course, is this idea that Jesus's there was no true union of natures. Jesus' divine and human nature, that they were so separated, Jesus almost becomes kind of like two persons, a divine person and a human person. And he also took up a struggle against the opposite heresy, which is Monophysism. So instead of dividing Christ so separately that he almost becomes two persons, the Monophysites actually squish the natures together so they're inextricably woven into like one kind of divine human substance. So he, of course, you know, railed against them. He's eventually succeeded in Alexandria by Dioscorius. And Dioscorius, however, was a full Monophysite. And there was a synod of Ephesus in 449, where Dioscorus succeeded in deposing Theodoret, our church father for today, forcing him into exile. So Theodoret did the logical thing. He appealed to Pope St. Leo I, and Pope St. Leo I proceeded to declare the proceedings of the synod in Ephesus in 449 as null and void, calling it the robber synod. So if you ever hear the term robber synod of Ephesus, that's what it's all about, folks. So the emperor returned Theodoret to Sire in 450, and he also appears once again in history at the Council of Chalcedon in 451. And actually, they didn't want him to sit in the council. They were still leery about him possibly being having these Nestorian beliefs. So he was only seated at the council after he agreed to anathematize Nestorius and confirm that the Blessed Virgin Mary is the Mother of God and not of the son, a human person. Okay. So he is reinstated as Bishop of Sire, and he's recognized amongst the fathers of the Chalcedonian Council. And just, you know, as a closing note about Theodoret, his knowledge of classical Greek authors is outstanding. And his, even though his mother tongue was Syriac, his writings are in Greek. And apparently, if you are into Greek, his Greek is excellent, in a very, although a very simple style of Greek. And as I said, he died in 466. So that's our Meet the Early Father for today, Theodoret of Sire. Coming up on the other side of the break, we have Catholic Brian Mercier coming on board. We're going to be talking about the youth, and we're going to talk about obstacles to evangelism and also lighting a fire with apologetics. So stay tuned, folks.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God, and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. And we're going to talk about youth. We're going to talk specifically about how can we evangelize youth? What are the obstacles to evangelizing? How about teaching apologetics. What's the best way to introduce youth to the stuff that we do here at the dojo, you know, explaining, defending the faith, learning about the faith. So to help us work through that, we have as our guest, I think somebody that's incredibly qualified in this area. His name is, if you're familiar in the YouTube, he's known as Catholic Brian. That is Catholic Brian Mercier. He's a professional Catholic speaker, a retreat leader, author. He's also a Catholic apologist in his own right, of course. He's spoken at countless teen and adult gatherings over 20 years, from confirmation retreats, parish missions, key talks, Catholic school retreats, seminars, workshops, all sorts of great stuff. He's also been on television, radio. He's been all over the place, and he also has his own YouTube channel, so check it out, Catholic Brian Mercier. So, Brian, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Thank you, Gary. Always good to be here.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, talk about if there's an authority on talking to youth or knowing youth and interacting with youth, you're the go-to man as far as I'm concerned, because you had a lot of experience.
Thank you. I work with teens a lot, but before I get into the teens, I just have to say that I liked your brain lock analogy. I thought that was a good one with people that I talk to all the time, whether on social media, YouTube, or in person at retreats and stuff. I thought that was a brilliant analogy and very true for a lot of people I speak to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background with these things? By the way, folks, you can also invite Brian to your parish and, you know, youth conference, whatever. But tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I have actually been a Catholic speaker and apologist for over 20 years. After my conversion, I just wanted to tell everybody about Jesus. I wanted to share the gospel of Jesus. I wanted to, especially our young people, because they're walking away from the church in droves. When I was growing up, I asked a lot of questions. How do we know God exists? How do we know the Bible's true? How do we know a lot of things? And nobody would give me good answers except, well, Brian, you just have to believe, or you just have to have faith, or, you know, God's a mystery. And so none of those were satisfying. And so I walked away for a little while and ended up having to look up all these answers for myself many years later. And I've spent the last 20, 25 years looking up all the answers and sharing it with other people. And I find that teenagers today especially are cynical, they're skeptical, they're in some ways more rational, they like science, and a lot of people are walking away from the faith for two reasons. One, because we just don't promote it well, and it seems boring and out of touch, and we just don't care about it. I mean, why do I need religion? I have my car, I have my pets, I have my family, I have my friends. Why in the world would I need God? I'm happy. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is, I've noticed over the years, is that kids have a lot of questions. Teens, young adults have a lot of questions that we don't answer. We don't give good answers to, especially difficult topics today, that like homosexuality, transgender, and other things that they're being bombarded with that they have legitimate questions about. And they're just not very good answers. And so they walk away from the faith and they retain these questions throughout their whole life and move into more of a doubt or a skepticism. So I've been giving confirmation retreats, Catholic school retreats, college retreats, retreats of all times, all kinds for youth and young adults to really help them in their faith. And when I first started this many years ago, I talked about the gifts of the Holy Spirit. I talked about the Pope. I talked about apologetics, and people hated my retreats. And I questioned myself and I wondered why they didn't like my retreats. And I realized it's because they don't even believe in God a lot of times. They don't even think the Bible is true. They're not even sure if Jesus existed. And we're trying to give them all these things because we think they're at a level of where they're supposed to be, but in reality, they're not. So I've had to remake all my retreats to address their questions, their doubts, their concerns, to create a strong foundation of faith on which we can build on for the rest of the retreat. And by the end of the retreat, we do Eucharistic adoration and they have a really powerful encounter with Jesus and many, many lives are changed. And I also wrote my book, Why Do You Believe in God? To answer a lot of their questions as well.
Awesome. Yeah, boy, that is such a great point. Because many times, especially those who are studied in the faith, you know your stuff, you just assume that the audience is at the same level as you, And it's really, you know, you can't just make that assumption. And your experience, you know, this squares with my experience and other people I know in the field that, you know, especially with youth, they are at a much, much more lower level where they're struggling with some very, very basic issues. And, you know, if you start hitting them with high theology, it's just, you know, it just bounces off them.
I would agree. And I would have, I would not hesitate to say that many adults are sadly on the same level. Many adults have the education of youth. And we've been doing this for 40 years because catechesis hasn't been passed on. So even those people who grew up to be adults, they still haven't lived their faith. It's not something that's real to them. It's not something that they get on a much deeper level all the time. And I've seen this for decades in religious education. We're teaching eighth graders with eighth grade books and expecting them to have eighth grade knowledge when the reality is they probably only have about a second, third, or even fourth grade knowledge of the faith. Consequently, we have high schoolers who are preparing for confirmation even up until 10th grade, and they only have about a fifth or sixth grade education of the faith. People who are in fifth and sixth grade only have about a second or third education degree in the faith. So we're dealing, I mean, what we're dealing with is a huge problem. It needs to be, in my opinion, completely revamped in some way, shape, or form, because I feel in my heart that that's why we find it boring. That's why we don't get it. I hated math, Gary. And I was good at math when I was in school. I won math Bs and I could get it like that. But I lost 2 years of math through bad teachers and maybe my own fault. But the point is, after that, I hated math because I couldn't get it. I didn't understand it. It didn't make sense to me. And so I'd rather throw it out the window. And I feel by analogy that many people have done that with the faith. They've thrown it out the window because it doesn't make sense. It's old. It's outdated. It's superstitious. There's not a lot of good answers out there. You know, we have science. Why do we need faith? I mean, look at the scandals. Why would I believe in a church or go to a church that has priests that do that? I mean, that's an evil church. They're telling me what to do sexually and they don't even know how to behave. Please, I can't stand the hypocrisy. In a lot of ways, they're not wrong. You know, there's a lot of problems that need to be worked through. And these teens are struggling with it. And I find that when you give teens questions and answers that make sense, so many of them have said, you know what, if I knew this a long time ago, I would have come back to the faith, or I would have never left the faith. Or they even say, I'm going to go home and start praying again tonight, or I'm going to go back to church. And because when they get it and when it makes sense, and when they realize that there's a hole in their heart that only God can fill, that is the purpose of our life. The meaning of the universe is that we need God. And when they get that, they desire it naturally.
Yeah. Boy, you made such a great point. I mean, when I used to have a nonprofit ministry for apologetics, those watching live stream, you'd be able to see it over my shoulder. But we have a poster and it says, who would expect their child to succeed in business with only an eighth grade education? Yet Catholics, you know, expect people to grow up with an eighth grade appreciation of their faith and live in the world and be okay. I mean, it's just insanity, you know, that we don't continue this, you know, giving a foundation like beyond the eighth grade. So you go out in the quote unquote real world where you're being hit by all these different ideas, and you have the mentality of an eighth grader as far as what the church is, what Jesus is, you know, what God taught. It's not surprising that we just lose tons and tons of people.
Exactly, especially since church seems boring today and it's not explained well, and that's a whole other issue. But I think around sixth grade is a good time when kids really start questioning. Of course, they question before that, but sixth to eighth grade, that middle school, that's the crossroads where they're either going to come and receive answers and stay in the church, or they're not going to receive answers. They're going to find it irrelevant to their life, and they're going to leave. And so I like working with middle school and high school ages especially. And I also work with adults and young adults and people up through the ages too. But I like this age in a particular way because I like to hit them at the crossroads and get them on board with Christ, especially kids in seventh and eighth grade. I mean, they're open still. They're questioning. They're a little skeptical, but they're still innocent and open. And that's why I give them the intellectual component in my retreats. I give them the fun component of games and icebreakers to break down their walls and help them to trust me. Because as a famous phrase, phrase in youth ministry that says kids don't care what you have to say until they know you care. And so I really try to build those relationships with them in the retreats. And then I talk to them and they're more open and they hear it. And then at the end, we pray and I give them the spiritual component and let Jesus minister to them, to their brokenness. I mean, so many kids today are carrying an amazing amount of brokenness and hurt and rejection and abuse, and they don't talk about it. They don't deal with it. And it's literally just pouring out of them. And so in my retreats and in my ministry particular at YouTube and just ministering one-on-one, I really like to hit these kids where they're at. And I really like to help them deal with these problems so they can heal, so that they can become whole, and so that they can find purpose and meaning in Jesus Christ. And I can tell you that a lot of DREs, religious education instructors, they don't like adoration for kids because they don't think kids can handle it. They've told me I don't want it at my retreats. And I said, well, that's what I do. And I remember one lady in New Jersey said, well, I know you want it for an hour, but I'm going to give you 5 minutes. We'll let the kids go to adoration for 5 minutes. I said, wow, 5 minutes. Woo. And so I put it on 45 minutes on the schedule anyways. And when we went into adoration, we had been there for 55 minutes. And I couldn't find the director of religious education. I'm like, is she mad at me? Where did she leave? Like, what's going on? I found her. She just came out of the bathroom and she had a box of tissues in her hand and she was sobbing like a baby. And she's like, honey, I have been doing this a really long time. And if I had not seen this with my own eyes, I would not have believed it. These kids were going from their pews up to the altar in front of the monstrance and kneeling before Jesus and praying like you have never seen people pray in their life, never seen adults pray. These kids were praying their hearts out. And even after an hour, they didn't want to leave the church because they were being impacted by the power of Jesus in adoration. And we're talking 13-year-olds. It was a really powerful moment. And that's why I love to do it in that aspect. Give them the fun, give them the intellectualism, teach them about their faith, and give them an encounter with Jesus.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, I call it radiation therapy. being in the radiance of Christ in the Eucharist, that you cannot walk away unchanged.
Exactly. Yeah, and even if they're not changed immediately, those seeds are planted. You know, it's going to come back to them later in life. And I've had pure atheists at my retreats who said that they were atheists. They said that, you know what, after this retreat, I'm no longer an atheist. And they sent me letters saying, I'm going back to church every week now. I'm even going to confession. You've really completed my faith. And it's a beautiful thing. I had one girl who said that.
Brian. All right. Music's coming up. I don't want to get that. We'll hear it on the other side of break. We're talking with Catholic Brian Mercier about you. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to or are called to as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference. or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. And, you know, I forgot to mention this. I'm going to put this in really quick. But, again, all you apologists out there, mark August 21st down on your calendar because I'm doing a live YouTube event along with my buddies John DeRosa of ClassicalTheism.com and also Pat Flynn of The Pat Flynn Show. And just go to handsonapologetics.com, scroll down, and click the banner. What if we could show you how to never lose a religious argument again? Click it, and you'll get all the information right there. So thank you for letting me throw this little commercial in. So, yeah, Brian, right before the break, you were going to tell us a story about how one of the youths were affected by your retreat.
Yes, this one girl had sent me a letter after the retreat and said that she did not want to be there at all. She was an atheist, and she legitimately wasn't going to the retreat, and she didn't tell her parents about it, hoping they'd forget. And her dad went up to her room and literally, she said, dragged her down, kicking and screaming to the retreat. And she hated the whole thing, but at some point, something I said awoke in her and like made her think about it in a different way. And then God really got a hold of her during the adoration time, during our prayer service. And she ended up saying that it really completely transformed her life, that she teaches CCD now, that she's going to church. She brings her friends to adoration with her, and she's even discerning religious life. So, I mean, this is the power that God has to transform souls if we know how to get through these to these teens and really present it to them in a way that they can understand and put them in front of Jesus. I mean, I think for a long time we've said, oh, they can't do adoration. No, they can't do prayer. We've watered it down for like 30 or 40 years. Kids hate things watered down. So enough with blowing up the balloons and watching them rise and talking about the resurrection of Jesus. They need like real meat, because when they get the real meat and it makes sense, they digest it and they internalize it, and they oftentimes even come back.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, thanks be to God. You know, in your story, I found it really fascinating that this youth director, DRE, you know, her heart was in the right place. She wants to do the right thing, but, you know, she didn't know how to do it. So since it's, you know, not ethical for us to clone you, if you're in every parish, as much as I wish we could, you know, for any DREs out there listening, is there any basic steps, like things that you absolutely need to do when you do a retreat with teens or something like that? You know, what are the essential points to kind of breaking through that barrier?
Well, I think you need to present a retreat that's not just, and this is not to, you know, make light of it or bring offense to anybody, but I've seen a lot of retreats that are, you know, more arts and crafts, where we design a poster, you know, about the theme of the retreat. And that's nice. And that builds friendships and maybe community. So it could be a part of the retreat. But when retreats are too much focused on just fun or just being part of a community or talking, well, we're not learning our faith. We're not growing our faith. A lot of times, and I hate to say this, but a lot of times people want to end with Mass. And they'll tell me, I'd rather end with Mass because the Mass is the most important prayer on earth. And it's the most powerful prayer on earth. And I said, I agree. But that's not the best way to get through teens. Because teens, as soon as they walk into a church, they tune out because they're so used to doing that. And so we need an avenue or a platform like adoration where we can play music, where we can coach the kids, give them a little bit of some meditation here or there, give them things to think about, have them take turns walking up to Jesus and praying and pouring out their hearts to him. We need something that gets them out of the box of their normal thinking and gets them into a new way of thinking about Jesus. In Mass, I always like to do Mass. I prefer to start retreats with Mass, but I think adoration is a powerful prayer because it allows them to do that. Whereas a lot of people just throw in a prayer service at the end, like we'll say a decade of the rosary, or we'll have this thing where each of the kids reads something from a piece of paper and it's supposed to be a prayer service. Those things are nice, but they don't really get to the heart of what kids are struggling with today. Mm-hmm. Like the meditation that I read at the beginning of every prayer service I do at my retreats, that it's meant to speak to the kids' hearts. It talks about from when they start growing up, what were they like? Did they have both parents? Were they abused? Did they struggle with insecurities? Were they bullied at school? What are their issues? What are those hurts that they have that they never deal with? These are the things that are preventing them from coming closer to God. A lot of times when we're really hurt, we think that God's even going to hurt us. I mean, we block out people on earth because for fear of being hurt, we just put up walls, but we unconsciously put up walls to God too. We unconsciously put up walls and we don't let him in. So what we need to do is teach them that God is trustworthy. We need to teach them that God is love. We need to teach them that God wants to heal them, make them new, be present in their life. Well, if God's real, well, then why doesn't he answer my prayers? If he does care about me, why didn't he keep my mom from dying? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? I mean, these objections and these struggles that the kids have are really what's keeping them from really giving themselves over to God completely. So, you know, doing nice arts and crafts and stuff like that is nice, but it doesn't hit the heart of the problem. So I think we really need to hire some good speakers who can speak on really powerful topics that are relevant for kids. I think that's the first thing. I think crafts and games can be important as a way to build a relationship with the kids and the speakers to help open them up for the talks. But I also think that we need a really good, deep prayer time as well. Not something foofy or fluffy. We need a really powerful encounter with Jesus. It doesn't always have to be adoration. You know, it could be a made up, some sort of prayer experience, but it shouldn't be watered down. It should be powerful and really get kids to encounter Jesus in some way. That can be more challenging. That can be difficult, but there are a lot of good speakers out there in this country, and there are a lot of good people who do what they do in that respect.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it's funny. And maybe it's just me. I'm kind of talking from my own experience, but I grew up in a good Catholic home. So I just assumed that, you know, people naturally know what you would do in prayer. You know, you would know that you bring all your cares, your suffering, your troubles, whatever, to the Eucharist. You would, you know, it's like it's second nature. So it's almost like you would think, well, I don't need to teach the kids how to adore Jesus. You know, I don't need to teach all these really fundamental ideas. But we really do. You can't assume just because, you know, that they were baptized and they went to a Catholic school, that they even know how to pray. They know how to adore Christ. You know, you almost have to take these little baby steps, you know, to make sure that all those basics are in place, don't you?
And that's a huge, you hit the nail on the head. You hit it on the head. I mean, I did a rosary day once where we made rosaries, had them blessed, and then prayed them. And these were with 10th grader confirmation classes. And at least half the kids came up to me and asked me if I had pamphlets with the Our Father and the Hail Mary on it because they didn't know the prayers. We're talking kids who are about to be confirmed, don't know the prayers that my friends who have kids know at 3 years old, at 4 years old. They already know these prayers, and these 16-year-olds don't know these prayers. So it's a huge problem. And I have kids after retreats all the time come up to me, and they'll say things like, you know, I really love the retreat, and I want to come close to God, but I have no idea, like, what prayer is. I don't even know what that looks like. And a majority of teens today don't even know how to pray. And I think It goes even deeper than that, depending on what part of the country you are. I'm in the Northeast, so we're the coldest part of the Christian climate. I'd say 80 to 90%, maybe 70 to 90% of kids don't even believe in the Eucharist. They think it's just a symbol. So why would we put them in front of the Eucharist or even have Mass at a retreat and think that's going to do something when they don't even believe half of that in the first place? Yeah. So one of my talks is always on the Eucharist at a retreat and always on the true presence, which is the source and summit of our faith. And because I ask adults too, when I give adult retreats, I say, how many of you adults out there, you know, say 500 adults, think that the Eucharist is just a symbol? How many of you think it's really Jesus? And I would say even among adults, it's split. Half the hands say it's a symbol. Maybe half or a little less than half say it's the real thing. They're not sure. And then I always say, how many people aren't sure? And a lot of hands will still go up. But the point is, among teens and adults, there's a severe lack of catechesis in our church. I mean, when I was a DRE, I made up for all 12 grades at our church. This is what the kids should know at every level and every grade. So at first grade, these are the two prayers that the kids should know by the end of the year. And these are the 10 things, doctrines, we'll say, you know, God is love. God is a Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, basic, simple things. These are what they should know. In second grade, these are the 10 things they should know and the two prayers they should know. And by the time they get up to seventh grade, they should know the creed by the end. So each grade has a guideline of what kids should know and reinforce. And we pray these prayers every single day throughout the year. And we reinforce these 10 things at the beginning and the end of every class so that we just kind of like the old Baltimore Catechism style, just pound it in. But not just pound it in, but teach them why we believe these things. Teach them to understand it more. So bottom line, kids don't even believe in the Eucharist. Kids don't know how to pray. It's no wonder they don't go to church, and it's no wonder they don't have a relationship with God, and that is what we need to tackle.
Yeah. In fact, you know, in my own parish, and I'm trying to push this, is I think Catholic parishes need to instruct young adults how to instruct their kids. You know, as we've gone through a few generations where that, you know, we've kind of forgotten how to evangelize our kids or how to teach them the basics of the faith. And what I'm hearing from you, Brian, is, you know, they don't know what prayer is because the parents don't pray in the home. You know, they don't see the life of the faith being lived out. So, you know, they hear words that catechists say about prayer and all this other stuff, but they just don't have the experience to connect with that.
I would 100% agree. And I think a lot of people blame religious education for not doing their job when it's not their job to educate your kids. It's your job to educate your kids. I mean, in back in the day, the parents used to pray with the kids every single day. Like I said, all my Catholic friends, serious Catholic friends, their kids know all their prayers by the time they're four, and they pray grace before meals. They know it all. And they know a lot about their faith too. I mean, I went to Steubenville. I remember Scott Hahn's little girl. She was only like 9 years old, and she sat next to me in church one day. And she said, "I said, oh, I'm not feeling good today. I have a headache." She's like, "Oh, you could pray to this."
Awesome. Well, we're talking with Catholic Brian Mercier. Stay tuned, folks.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Justin's show and it's great." And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the Mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Master Apologist Brian Mercier about youth and getting through to youth, evangelizing youth, youth retreats. And Brian is giving us gold. I mean, this is great, great info. Well, Brian, you mentioned something, I guess, something really intriguing to me is that you mentioned that you have a cooler climate, you know, religiously in the Northeast. I kind of chuckled because I'm from the Midwest, you know, I'm in the Detroit area, and I always associate cold with the bad winters that we sometimes get. You've talked all over the country and outside the country. Is there a difference in regions when you talk to youth? Like, is there a different, you know, would you have a different kind of retreat in one area as opposed to another area of the country? Or is this something that is, there really isn't any difference?
Generally, there are some differences, though I generally give the same retreats and find them effective. Though I find when, say, I go down south, there's faith is still a lot more of an aspect in people's lives and their families and family life. And so like when I spoke in Texas, a lot more kids believe in God. When I asked them, how many of you believe in God and how many of you pray every day? A lot more hands went up than say when I do it in Connecticut or Massachusetts up here in the Northeast. You could take a typical church, and I have a lot of churches up here in Connecticut where I live, where 70% of them will say they don't believe in God or they're not sure if God exists. So we're talking major skepticism and major walking away from the faith to a point that's quite frankly epidemic and concerning. And so when I go down south or maybe to more advanced places, like I got to speak at the Catholic Family Land in Ohio, and I asked the kids, how many of you believe in God and how many of you pray every day? And every one of their hands just about went up. I was like, okay, I'm going to give a whole different type of retreat. But that's why I ask these questions at the beginning, just so I can see where they're at and kind of adjust the retreat for them if needed.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, when I do retreats, you know, I always do, it's always apologetics orientated. And I found that the teens are the best group because they're feisty. You know, they want to fight, and you know, they're not they won't shy down if you challenge them. You know, if you challenge their worldview or you challenge them to defend what they believe. And I know a lot of parents are you know, they're kind of afraid. You know, they're shell shocked by all the arguing and fighting and everything. But I personally think that's kind of the sweet spot for evangelism is, you know, the young teenage years, because they want to interact. They want to be combative. And if we could just take that strength and channel it towards something good, you know, like defending the faith or, you know, piety, love for God. I mean, man, that's a huge game changer, isn't it?
I would agree. And I think you put it well, channeling it in a good direction. I love when kids argue with me, disagree with me, challenge me, because it means that they're not believing blindly. It means that they're actually thinking about it critically. They're trying to question it, and they're trying to come to an understanding of it. When you just tell a kid you have to believe, stop questioning God, you're taking away their intellectual capabilities and faculties, and you're basically making religion like this. Just believe. Why? I don't know. Just do it. There's no evidence. That's right. Fine. And so we actually want kids to challenge me. And I used to teach religion in a Catholic school, and I said, if you guys just give me the answers that I want on a test, I will fail you even if they're right. I was like, I want you to question it. I want you to wrestle with it. And if you think I'm wrong, you tell me. And they did. And we had great discussions about it. Same thing with kids on my retreat. Yeah. We discuss them. They challenge me and we go through them. I run, help run two camps every year called Camp Veritas, Camp Truth. It started with 50 kids and is now over 1,600 teenagers from 7th to 12th grade in 5 locations. And I take a week, 2 weeks out just to be kind of the spiritual camp counselor. So my role is a little bit special. I just walk around camp for a week and talk to 600 kids about their spiritual problems, their questions about God, things that they're struggling with internally. And I have a lot of kids. They write down 2 pages, front and back, single spaced, of all the questions they have about God. And we sit for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and just answer them. And these kids just overwhelmingly have such a powerful encounter with God later on, because it makes sense in their mind and they're able to open themselves up to Him. Other kids have major abuse or family issues going on or things that they're struggling with. And I get to talk to them and they challenge me. Why would God let this happen? This and that. And you know what? Whenever this happens, it's an awesome opportunity for evangelization and for showing God's love and who He really is, why He lets things happen, the reasons behind it, and that sort of thing. And this is what kids need to hear, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a huge blind spot. And, you know, like you mentioned a couple of times, that the youth that shows up, you know, at retreats, usually they're forced to go there. I mean, they're living in such a broken world. And in many ways, they're injured by that. You know, in a retreat setting, though, how can you minister to that? Like, let's say if someone's listening, maybe they're in charge of a youth group or a DRE or something. You know, how do they? What's the best way to treat something like that? Would you explain redemptive suffering to them? You know, meditate on the cross, or where would you go?
If I forget to answer that question, let me know. But let me get back to that in 1 second. I think it's imperative, whether you're a youth minister, whether you're a DRE, whether you're someone like me who gives retreats, I think it's imperative first to build relationships with the teens. When I first started my retreats early on, I used to eat dinner with the adults. I used to talk to them, and sometimes I still do. But generally now, especially when I bring my team, I have a whole team that can come in and bring to do retreats. We're not allowed to talk to each other during breaks, and we're not allowed to talk to each other during like lunchtime or snacks. Each of us has to go to a different table and start conversations with teens. What are your favorite movies, guys? What video games do you like? What do you like to do? What kind of a person are you? And you can start to pick out those people who are doing pretty well and those people who aren't. And you may move over to the people who aren't and say, hey, you know, how you doing? You know, are you okay with this or that? Or what did you think of this talk? That's the one thing I often do. What did you think of this talk? And I'll let all the kids go around and give their honest opinion so I can see where they're at in their faith. So for kids who are broken, was that the question?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I think that would be intimidating for, you know, a DRE, a youth leader or something, where you encounter somebody who's really hurt or broken. You know,
yeah.
Explain loving God and, you know, and heal that the hurt.
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. I feel like God has given me a singular grace for it. And I don't mean that as in like only I received it, but like He's given me a special grace to understand people, to feel their hurts, and to almost like the gift of counsel, to know what to say and how to say it to get through to people. My wife always says, I have a great gift of opening people up and getting them to talk about all their problems. Not everybody has that gift, though.
That's true.
So there, you may need to bring in speakers who can address those topics, who can address hurts and healing and how to heal. You may if you're a youth minister or DRE, you may bring in books, yeah, and have, or magazines, and have them around, you know, where kids can see them when they come in. There's different ways that you may have to brainstorm on how to get through to these teens, because it's a difficult thing. They're not going to open up to just anyone or most everyone. It's something that comes when you spend time with them, when you care about them, and you show them that you truly are invested in their good and you want to help them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think if you don't know what to say, I think listening is probably, you know, the most therapeutic thing, just to know that you care enough about them to want to hear what they have to say, you know, rather than give them a prepackaged sermon or something.
You know, exactly. The worst thing you could do is to give them bad advice or bumper sticker advice. Just do this, because they're going to walk away. They're not interested. They want the real thing, and they know it when they hear it. And sometimes I think we offer advice because we don't know what else to say. But sometimes the best thing to say is, you know what? I'm sorry that that happened to you. You know, I'm going to pray for you. I know that God will heal you and help you. And I don't know what to say. I don't have any advice, but just know that I care for you and that I'm going to be praying for you. Something sincere like that. I think that helps more.
Yeah. And of course, you know, pray that God gives you that grace of counsel, you know, that, he'll give you the words then what to say. I mean, I think so many times we forget to do that, you know, to ask for God's help. But he puts you in that situation. He wants you to pray to him. You know, he wants you to ask for help.
Absolutely. And I can't say I've heard everything, but I have heard a lot. And some of the things I hear, I'm like, what in the world? I'm thinking to myself as they're telling me their life story. I'm like, God, what advice could I even possibly offer? I can't even relate to this. They've gone through far more than I'll ever go through. And so I start praying, come Holy Spirit, give me counsel, help me to know what to say. And almost always, you know, he either, you know, helps me just to listen if I need to, or he gives me the right thing to say in the right way to say it too.
Yeah, very good. Man, I can't believe this hour has just flown. You know, Brian, how can people get a hold of you and information about your works and also your YouTube? How to check out your videos?
Well, wherever you are, I would love to come give a retreat for your church, confirmation, Catholic school, whatever. And you can find me at CatholicBryan.org, BRYAN. You can find my Catholic Truth. YouTube has been changed over to Catholic Truth because that's my new nonprofit. And so you can, my hashtag is Catholic Brian. You can find me anywhere with that, or you can look up my YouTube at Catholic Truth.
Very good. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Gary. God bless you.
All right. And you too. All right. Catholic Brian, Brian Mercier, what a great, great advice, great data. You know, for anybody out there that is into apologetics, evangelism, maybe you're a DRE, maybe you're with a youth group, or maybe you're just a parishioner and you feel like your parish, you know, needs to reach out for youth. I highly recommend that you get in contact with Catholic Brian. And he's got lots of great material. And as you could tell, he's fired up about the faith. And that's beautiful. I mean, it's just like me. You know, the older I get, the more fired up I get, because you get to know more about Jesus and love Jesus more. So anyway, coming up tomorrow, you know, we're going to continue our talk about youth with Anthony Diekman. He's talking about a program of apologetics that he teaches to high school students. And the topic tomorrow is going to be like, how can you explain the reliability of the New Testament to youth, you know, to eighth graders, seventh graders? So that's going to be a great program for us. Also, boy, I tell you, this is the fastest hour in Catholic Talk Radio. It just flies. But that's good, folks, because coming up next, you have the show that started it all. High Impact Catholic Talk with the Terry and Jesse Show. Coming up next, and it's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn down the dojo lights for a little bit of a pause. But we'll be back tomorrow, God willing, and with more hands-on apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. It's been great to talk to you. And by the way, don't forget, August 21st, live YouTube event. Go to hands-onapologetics.com. Click on that white banner right underneath the show. I'll give you all the info and lots of freebies. All right, well, I hope everybody has a great day, and God willing, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.